Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 137. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. I'm getting ready for Christmas. Like, we've got, you know, the tree all set up, like, the lights. It's a Wonderful Life is on just repeat constantly. I don't even know why. In fact, I tried to turn the TV off and it comes back on. It's kind of scaring me. But
you got the elf on the shelf. Everything good?
Yeah. No elves on. That is creepy and weird, man. Yeah,
I completely agree.
I would rather hear about Christmas miracles than, have something staring at me from a shelf.
Oh, yeah. Very cool. Well, it's no miracle on 34th Street, but I have heard it referred to as the miracle on Moscone. And that's the announcement at Oracle Open World about the Oracle Cloud VMware solution, which is VMware Cloud Foundation running on Oracle Cloud infrastructure. We had a chance to talk to VMware's Don Sullivan and Oracle's G. Ruiz and Fossil Hassan about this announcement. So take a listen.
All right. Well, John, joining us now on the podcast, VMworld 2019 Barcelona, are some badges we don't usually see. Some folks with Oracle badges.
Yeah, that's a shade of red I haven't seen around VMworld.
That's good, though. That's a good thing. So joining us today from VMware is Don Sullivan.
Hi, John. Hi, everyone.
Also joining us from Oracle is G. Ruiz and Fossil Hassan. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning and good afternoon. Huh? Thanks very much.
Yeah, and I just found out G's actually from Madrid. I love Madrid.
Yeah, whatever you want to come, just let us know.
don't tempt me. I'll be there tomorrow. No. So, gentlemen, welcome to VMworld. And I heard that there's some news, Don, around the VMware-Oracle partnership.
Well, for the first time ever, Oracle is actually at VMworld, has a booth, has a full sponsorship, and has sessions. And we are absolutely thrilled to welcome Oracle and the Strategic Alliance, which was announced at Oracle Open World by Larry Ellison. About a month ago. It's been 6, 7, 8 months into working, and we are all thrilled to be partners with each other.
It's an outstanding news, huh?
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, we never really thought a long time ago this would happen, so we're now referring to this as the miracle at Moscone.
I can see the T-shirts now.
Yeah. Probably, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's nice. It's a story about how we became friends, huh? So now, having this relation, I think it's very good for both sides. We have large customers running VMware stuff, Oracle databases, and now we're bringing all that to the cloud. And so, we can talk about it now.
Yeah, so that's what I'm curious about. So what actually is this agreement, and how does this affect VMware customers?
So there's two parts to the agreement. The first part is that Oracle has now become a member of the VMware Cloud Partner Program with the Oracle Cloud VMware solution, mm-hmm. which is VMware Cloud Foundation running on Oracle Cloud infrastructure. And the second part is that we've put to rest any of the uncertainty around the overall complete support position on an executive level between VMware and Oracle. So the actual legal language is that Oracle products are supported on VMware environments in Oracle-supported computing environments, and that is great news for the hundreds of thousands of customers that are both Oracle and VMware customers.
Yeah, that's true, and with this partnership, it's a journey that's just starting. As Don said, that it's taken a long time, but now that partnership has started, it's time to take it out to the customers and make sure that the customers benefit out of it.
So what are some of the benefits or kind of we've got, 4,000 different cloud provider partners, but everybody definitely has their own unique spend, be it scale or apps or services. What are you trying to bring that's unique to this mix?
We took a different approach of what you see out there in other cloud providers. Mostly what you find there is managed services. So we went a different path. We want to give full control to our customers. You get your ESX root access. We give it that for you. We're building an image where all the building blocks from VCF, so you have ESX, vSAN, NSX, vCenter, and all the stuff. You get that deploy, and you have full control of that. It's a way we're trying to fill a gap, because we find a lot of customers on the enterprise, and when you run in the cloud, you are tied to the upgrade process of the cloud provider. And other customers need to go on their own pace upgrading. They need to launch a lot of tests of their applications, test that everything is compatible, it's certified, would not break any other service. So we're giving that to the customers to make it at your own pace.
So this will be bare metal. They've got basically bare metal access, and if they wanted to say install a custom VIB for replicator, you know, for a VIO filter, that actually would work there versus other environments where you're locked out.
Yeah, we'll build things on three bare metals. Our bare metals are like 52 OCPUs. We can run up to 768 gigs of RAM, 51.2 terabytes of non-volatile memory express. We're using all our storage based on non-volatile memory express. So you have a real beast that will be running on
52 terabytes of NVMe in a host. That's going to bring some punch.
So what does the provisioning process look like? So, you know, customer says, hey, I'm really interested in this. Boom, click here, buy now, and then what?
So the customer, assuming that they're already Oracle Cloud customers, they can go in and provision a VMware SDDC. They go in and select the number of hosts that they want to start with. The starting is three bare metals, as G said. When they start with three bare metal hosts, they get about 156 cores of CPU, 768 gigs of memory per server, and 156 terabytes of storage across the SDDC.
Oh, very nice.
2 terabytes of RAM. Yes, all of the memory for my databases here. So,
and do the deployment models vary? Like everybody says, it's strictly bare metal, or does somebody say, hey, I want this, but can you guys provision it as a service to some sort of, whether like vSAN or other offerings, or is it just, boom, here's the box, go?
So it's going to start with bare metals. It's going to start with a specific shape of bare metals when it does go out, but eventually on the roadmap there will be other bare metal shapes that will get certified, and then customers will be able to use other services as well.
So starting with one t-shirt size, but intent to expand.
That is correct.
Got it. So my question is for anyone who wants to answer it, Don, anyone else, why do you think this took so long?
Wow, that's a loaded answer.
Inquiring minds
want to
know.
I want to reverse that question.
Sure.
I want to answer it this way.
Okay.
The reason it happened is it's best for everyone.
Of course.
It's best for Oracle. It's best for VMware. And most importantly, it's what Oracle on VMware customers needed. I wrote in a book, shameless plug, Oracle on vSphere, a number of years ago, that every Oracle feature and every VMware feature were 100% complementary, and they were the two most important, vSphere and Oracle RDBMS were the two most important and best pieces of software ever written. So it goes without saying, I think, that when customers are going to expand their entire hybrid cloud architectures and use Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, now with the product Oracle Cloud VMware solution, along with their on-premises VMware implementations, it is the absolute best of all worlds in terms of a potential Oracle implementation overall.
Well said.
I'll just take a cliched view to it. All good things take time, and here we are, Oracle and VMware working together and going out to the customers.
I like it. Is there any try and buy program on this, or is it like you just buy it and you're in, or how does that work?
So well, you can, if you want to try Oracle Cloud, you can sign up for free credits. And with that, what you get is $300 worth of free credits. You can start with that. There are free services that come with that as well. There's a free tier. Okay. So with the free tier, it never expires. You get virtual machines.
Real free tier, not fake free tier.
It's real free tier.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I watched the Oracle World keynote. I yeah, saw that shade thrown.
It's not 12 months account as we can find other places. It's just forever. You get load balancers, 10 meg, 2 virtual instances. You get access to our autonomous data warehouse, so you can have one OCPU instance for each, up to 2. So it's a way, well, I can say I'm moving my block up to Oracle Cloud because it's for free already. But if you want to get the VMware stuff, we have a limited availability program where we're bringing the largest customer to start testing and getting feedback of how it's performing and what they are looking at the solution, so they can play around.
That's good news. That's awesome. All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the podcast this week. As this starts to grow and as we start to see more information, we want to give you an open door policy to come back on the Virtually Speaking podcast and give us all the updates. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
More than happy. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Very cool. Yeah, those guys were great. John, they were a little nervous about answering the question about the partnership there, why it took so long.
You know, there are things that are technical that are easy to talk about, and then there are things that are political, which are generally best avoided.
All right. Well, speaking of technical, is our guest this week who's going to do some technical conversation around Oracle is Sudhir Balasubramanian. Sudhir, how you doing, man?
Good. Thank you for asking. How are you?
Did I just completely destroy your name?
Ah, you're good, man.
Okay, good. All right, well, before we get started, for those of you that don't know, Sudhir has been working at VMware for several years, focusing on Oracle solutions on VMware, and he's written a lot of great information, books and blogs, all of which I'll be leaving on the show notes of this page. But before we start talking about some of those things, Sudhir, I'm curious, what is your opinion of this new announcement that we just heard?
I mean, this is something that we've been waiting for a long, long, long period of time. Especially I joined VMware in 2012, and since 2012, this whole Oracle support, even though we had the Oracle support for Oracle products running on VMware, it was a bit too nebulous, and that actually prevented a couple of customers virtualizing their Oracle workloads on VMware. VMware platform. So with this support, enhanced support statement that more so Oracle than VMware released on September 16, 2019, this bodes very well for our Oracle customers. So I don't know if you have actually gone through the support statement, but 30 days afterward, the Metalink node 249.212.1 was actually cleaned up, and it now resonates and it very emphatically says without any ambiguity that pretty much every Oracle product in the Oracle arsenal is completely supported on the VMware virtualized platform.
Wow.
So for all Oracle customers running Oracle products on VMware, wow, this is a great, this is a big win for you guys.
That's a big statement.
Yep.
And so in the past, though, there was limited support. How did that work before?
I mean, in the past, there was always a support. So support was never an issue. Unfortunately, that was this FUD, you know, the fear, the uncertainty, and the doubt, and the whole nebulous, nebularity around this whole support that basically, put fear in the mind of the Oracle customers. So they used to think twice before, virtualizing the workload. But right now, with this statement, even though I know this has got nothing to do with licensing, right? And that's a different topic of discussion altogether, right? It's very unambiguous that Oracle is going to support every Oracle product running on a VMware platform. So this is something that should make Oracle customers more eager to virtualize their Oracle workloads.
Yeah, absolutely. So what have you been working on these days?
So recently we released the guidance about guidance around Oracle Rack, and the fact that now with running Oracle Rack on VMware Cloud on AWS, the whole concept of using Eagle Zero Ticks for Oracle Rack, that's pretty much out of the window. Let me go a bit into what that entails here. So by default, for virtual machines, if we have to, let's say, cluster a virtual machine or cluster a bunch of virtual machines for an Oracle Rack environment, the thing that we have to do is basically set the VMDK that holds the clustering software or the clustered database in a shared mode. And the only way that you would do it is, set that as Eagle Zero Tick,
yep,
or the multi-data flag, and then low presto, the clustering software would work. Unfortunately, what this actually means is storage has to be provisioned all upfront, right? So this takes a bit of a heavy hit on the storage guys, right? What this means is you cannot use thin provision disk for Oracle Rack clustering software, right? And that has been very well documented in KB articles 1034165 for VMFS file system and 212.1.1.8.1 for vSAN as well. So this year, September 24, 2019, starting SDDC version 1.8, version 2, vSAN data stores on VMware Cloud on AWS is now able to support the multi-writer mode on thin provision VMDKs. But prior to that, what we required was vSAN had to have the VMDKs to be Eagle Zero Thick provision for the multi-writer mode to be enabled. Starting September 24th, as I mentioned, SDDC version 1.8 v2, you no longer have to do that. So this is a great moment, because what this really means is customers no longer have to provision storage upfront when you're provisioning space for an Oracle Rack share storage.
Yeah, because I would imagine that an Oracle Rack, if we're talking about a database volume, is going to be pretty big, right? So this is not, there's a lot of capacity. We're not talking about a couple of gigabytes here. We're talking.
Absolutely correct. Yeah. Typically, if you look at the Oracle Rack deployments that we have across our customer base, across all four geos on VMware, right, they tend to be really big. Huge, a couple of terabytes. I would say like close to couple of customers that I've spoken to, a couple of customer deployments that I've seen runs up to like 120 to 140 terabytes. And those are, and even some of them are extended Oracle Rack clusters. So when you're talking about, Oracle Rack clusters in such volumes, essentially able to have multi-data flag run on thin provision disks, this saves a lot of storage space.
And this was actually, this has been a challenge with other business critical apps. Previously, Exchange used to have this requirement. I think SQL had this requirement, but they gradually relaxed it. So it's good to see this gradually working its way through the ecosystem, this kind of knowledge that thin provisioning isn't dangerous and you can do thin provisioning in a high performance way.
Yeah, because thin provisioning has been around forever, right? So, I mean, it makes, right. You know, and I know there are some, there are some schools of thought that say, well, you don't want to put thin provisioning on some of your most critical workloads for performance reasons, but that's not the case with Oracle, right?
If you go back to why this kind of came back, and this kind of is a fun thing with anything in technology, is if you go back to the early days of thin provisioning, so I go back to like some Clarion or something, or some VNX first gen, some of these systems would actually, when they use thin provisioning, they would keep the metadata map for where the blocks were on disk. And so anytime you had a read, it would have to read twice. It'd have to go look where that block was. Now, as thin provisioning evolved and arrays and vSAN, these other things evolved, or NFS with sparse came out, you started being able to keep that metadata map in memory, or you just went all flash. So you didn't really care about that read amplification. But there, to be fair, there used to be sometimes a 50% haircut for thin provisioning back in the day. And people used to not really know what they were doing. If we go back to the early 2000s, they would often hilariously overcommit the array. They'd run out of space. This was a problem. But as times have changed, so has the guidance on thin provisioning, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah, and so today we would not want to have a completely eager thick zero disk for our Oracle databases, right? It doesn't seem like a good idea.
No, that's correct. I mean, you don't need to do that. The other thing that I wanted to mention was the change that came out was actually good. I mean, it's a twofold change. One, that you don't need to have eager zero thick disk for clustered software, for example, Oracle Rack. The second is the change is basically an online change. So, for example, if you have a storage policy that requires the eager zero thick to have OSR or the object space reservation equals to 100, one could then create another storage policy with OSR equal to 0. And online, while the Oracle Rack cluster is running, you can change the storage policy of that shared device or the eager zero thick VMDK without any downtime. And this was something that we were able to do in the lab. This was something that we were able to show that, yes, you're able to change the storage policy of the VMDKs online, right, while the Oracle Rack cluster was running without any issue to the underlying or the overlying applications.
So you can change it from thick to thin online?
Absolutely. You can change it from thick to thin and from thin to thick online. So basically what I did was, as part of the test suite, right, so we had like 5 test cases. We had 2 storage policies, right, one with OSR equal to 100, one with OSR equal to 0. And we had an Oracle Rack cluster running, right, and we use Oracle ASM. This was a 19c Oracle version running on OEL 7.6. And we also had a load generator. It's called SLOB, Silly Little Oracle Benchmark. So essentially, it's a very high I/O intensive, throughput intensive workload. And while the workload was running, what I did was I changed the storage policy of the shared device from 100 to 0. And then I observed the database log files. I observed the ASM log files. I tried to observe any error messages in the var log messages, so on and so forth. Nothing. I didn't find anything. And the next test was, switch it back from 0 to 100 and see if you observe any adverse issues, right? I didn't see anything either. And then I said, maybe there was just a fluke. Why don't we just do it again just to observe that, doing it from 100 to 0, 0 to 100 doesn't really affect anything. Again, we didn't observe any issues. So we actually did the test 4 times. So we were able to prove that this is an online change. This does not affect the rack clusters. I did not see any cache eviction. I didn't see any cluster eviction. I didn't see any node evictions. None of the sessions got disconnected. So for an application guy, wow, this is something that can be done on the fly.
Yeah, that's nice. That's nice.
Well, and particularly when you're making that change on vSAN, there's a lot of extra resync, like throttling logic to prevent those types of block changes. Yeah, if you go back to the 5.5 days, it was kind of a YOLO. Let's just shove the blocks around as fast as possible. But there is actually intelligent throttling to detect if that resynchronization is causing latency and pull it back so you don't impact the production I/O.
Absolutely. I mean, and you're correct, because when we move from 0 to 100, right, we would then have to, because we had FTT equals to 1, it actually had to create another sibling, right?
Yep.
And then the resync happening. But like I said, with the intelligent resync throttling, I couldn't see, we didn't notice any adverse effect on the application.
Actually, yeah, with the thin change, to be fair, that's true. You're not actually moving data around. But even if correct. You were, if you wanted to make even additional changes, now that you think about it.
All right, so Oracle Rack multi-router disk no longer have that eager zero thick requirement. Is this just for VMware Cloud on AWS vSAN, or is this vSAN all vSAN?
Yeah, so this has been extended to vSAN as well. So as of December 5th, 2 days ago, 2019, right? So we released a patch. It's 6.7p01, and that addressed the same key limitation when provisioning shared devices with the multi-router flag for the Oracle Rack cluster. So the same, this patch resolved this issue as well. So now you can use on vSAN 6.7 patch release 01, you can then use Oracle Rack with the
thin provision devices for multi-router plaques. And this will work as well. So it's the same thing, right? So customers no longer have to provision Oracle the storage upfront for running Oracle Rack clusters on vSAN.
How did that get to VMware Cloud on AWS before just all vSAN? I wonder how that works.
It started as one large customer. Basically, they had a use case for it. If memory serves, I think they had something like 500 databases they were bringing in. And so they did the extended testing originally there. And also they can, the fun thing with VMC is they can push code before it comes, you know, to the rest of the on-prem. So it's a combination of, it's a highly curated area. So it makes things like RPQs a lot easier to test earlier, as well as also push code.
Very nice. Very nice. Exactly.
So what are some of the top requests? We've obviously done a lot to help enable Oracle Rack on vSphere, but what are some of the remaining top asks that you're seeing from customers? What are we looking towards?
Right. So there are two major asks from customers. And the second one is basically when people are deploying VMware Cloud on AWS. So I'm going to cover the first part, the first aspect of it. It's the classic issue of unable to perform storage vMotion when one is moving an Oracle Rack cluster from one data store to the other, or even when you're moving Oracle Rack cluster across data stores. Because the key limitation, one of the limitations for using the multi-router flag is storage vMotion is disallowed, and so is checkpoint, and so is snapshots. So essentially, the only way around it is if one had to storage vMotion on Oracle Rack cluster, either one would have to shut the cluster down, ouch, take out the multi-router flag, and then, you know, move and then storage vMotion the individual nodes and then put the whole thing back. That's rather a pain. Or the other way to do it is using the Oracle ASM, the Automatic Storage Management, and then do an online add and drop, right? And that typically Oracle DBAs have no issues doing it. But when you're talking about Oracle Rack cluster nodes, which are like larger than 3 and 4 and huge clusters, you know, this is an operational overhead. So this is something definitely customers have been asking for the last, I would say, 7 years since I've joined VMware in 2012.
Oh yeah.
So this is something that definitely it'll be good if this is addressed. And the second aspect that customers have been asking for since we gave them the flexibility and the ability to use HCX, the Hybrid Cloud Extender, to move their workloads from on-prem to the cloud and back, is HCX unfortunately doesn't work with shared devices as well. So the same problem afflicts HCX. So the major ask that I've been getting from customers was, hey, can we please have somebody look into see if HCX can actually replicate shared devices?
Oh yeah, because that's what VMware Cloud on AWS uses a lot for their mobility, right? Is HCX. Yeah, so I would imagine absolutely. That a lot of Oracle customers are going to want to be able to leverage that HCX mobility.
Right.
So have you seen people using things like DataGuard or Golden Gate or something to do the basically a fail, you know, a DR fail in or something? Or what are they doing now?
So when you use DataGuard, see, here's the thing, right? So when, yes, I have seen it. DataGuard absolutely works, right? Whether it is between two on-prem data centers or whether between on-prem and VMware Cloud on AWS. But when you're talking about stuff like data center evacuation, right? Or when you're talking about data center, mainly with data center evacuation, when you want to vacate a data center and go up to the cloud, that's when tools like HCX comes into being, right? And then the inability to use HCX with, let's say, a multiple Oracle Rack cluster, that actually slows the acceleration process down. So,
well, and if you think about it, like data always has gravity here. So if we're looking at, I've got this application that's got a database and a middleware and a web tier, I'd like to use HCX so I can fail over as a group and move or S3M or something, move them all at once. As opposed to if I move just the database and I've got all these things making database calls. I mean, HCX does a lot of cool WAN optimization to make that kind of suck less, but it's really nice to, when your web and your middle tier are expecting the database to be, you know, 1 millisecond away, they all move as a group rather than having to do this as this manual phased migration. So that makes sense.
You're absolutely correct. Because typically when we give our guidance, we say, you know what, measure the latency between the app and the database, and more so than often, right? For applications and databases, put them in a consistency group and then make sure that they are either on premises or they're on VMware Cloud on AWS. But don't make the mistake of having one in the cloud, like you so correctly pointed out, and one in the one on premises, because latency is going to suck big time.
Very cool. All right, yeah. Let's recap. So the miracle on Moscone, right? The announcement between VMware and Oracle, this new partnership. In addition, this all-inclusive VMware support for Oracle, which is pretty impressive. The new updates that no longer require whether it's vSAN or VMware Cloud on AWS, the eager zero thick requirement for Oracle, as well as a sneak peek into what VMware is looking for future releases. This has been very informative. If you want to learn more about what VMware is doing with Oracle, man, you definitely should be following Sudhir. He's at VRACDBA on Twitter. He's got a blog that's called virtualizingoracle.wordpress.com. And he's also written a book about it. It's called Virtualized Oracle Business Critical Databases. And so I'll be sure to leave links to all of this on the show notes of the podcast. Man, Sudhir, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this in all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to our friends at Oracle, Don Sullivan, and my good friend Sudhir. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.